Blog Talk Radio.
Because we're on live on the air.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, hold on. Let me get my president. I'm going to call in for sure.
Yeah, I'm going to hang up. Okay, because it's dead air now.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Brother Dimitri?
Yes.
Okay, very good. Sister Ada?
Yes, sir, you're on live.
Okay, we're on?
Yes, sir.
Okay, good. Well, then let's begin. Greetings to you. I'm Brother James Muhammad, a student in the ministry of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan in the city of Orlando, Florida. On behalf of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, and on behalf of this show titled Put on the New Man, we are honored and privileged tonight to welcome all of you who have tuned in to our show. I want to apologize for those of you who encountered what we ourselves have encountered with this interference, the source of which we know not. However, we're on point now. I always want to begin in the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, the one God to whom all praise is due, the Lord of the world. We thank Allah over and over again for his intervention in our affairs in the person of the great Mahdi, Master Fadl Muhammad, to whom praise is due forever. We thank him for raising up from our midst his messenger Messiah, the exalted Christ, the most honorable Elijah Muhammad, through whom we have been given our beloved and blessed Redeemer, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. In their names, beloved listeners, participants in this Blog Talk Radio program, I'm very happy and honored to greet all of you with the greeting words of peace. We say it in the Arabic language, Assalamu alaikum, peace be unto you, and welcome, welcome, welcome. Tonight, we are pleased and blessed to announce that we will be hosting our dear brother, a fellow student in the ministry of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, and in fact, on the research team of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. He is an accomplished author of many books, I'm sure some of which you have in your possession and have read or at least have heard of. The Supreme Wisdom Dictionary, When You Are in Trouble, Nurse the Quran, In the Light of Scripture, and then, of course, many more. Our brother, student minister Demetric Muhammad, he's on with us today. And, dear brothers and sisters, those of you who are listening, we're going to be discussing a recent article that he has completed. Writing. It's a magnificent article dealing with, of course, the subject matter of the political process, specifically and particularly voting, as it relates to the satisfaction of the needs and desires of the black man and woman of America. As you know now, or certainly should know, we have a new president elect. And when I say we, I use that pronoun advisedly, because I'm talking about those who are looked at as true Americans. And so, dear family, in this article, our brother, which is titled The Paradox of No Show, our brother highlights this question and, in fact, answers it statistically and analytically. Can black people get what we want and need without participating in the vote? So I'm not going to hold him up any longer. Time is fleeting. I want to open up the line to our dear brother and fellow student in the ministry, student minister Demetric Muhammad. Welcome, dear brother, once again to the show.
Thank you, Brother James, once again for having us. We're always very honored to be here as your guest and to participate on the Put on the New Man Blog Talk program. It's a wonderful program that does a fine job of discussing important issues relevant to the overall condition and well-being of the black community around the country and the world, and a great forum for the insertion of the teachings of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad that Minister Farrakhan has reintroduced America to, those teachings that are filled with practical solutions to many of the social ills of the American people and certainly his beloved black people in America. So I'm thankful and honored, and I look forward to the discussion.
As do we, dear brother. And before we go any further, I'd like to introduce also our co-host, Sister Ada Muhammad, hailing from Chicago. She's doing the engineering, handling the engineering aspect of the show, but she is, in fact, co-hosting the show with us, and we want to hear from her. And those of you who don't know her, you will soon get to know her. Our dear sister, Ada Muhammad, if you'd like to say a few words of introduction, Sister Ada, we are definitely welcoming your remarks.
Thank you so much. It's my pleasure to be participating in this great work in any capacity that Allah wills me to participate in. And I thank you for having me as your co-host this evening. Thank you, Brother Dimitrik. I did get a copy of the article, and as I was scrolling through the article, I didn't even know, where to start because it's so powerful, the information that you had in the article. And our Final Call newspaper, the biggest, baddest, boldest black newspaper on the planet Earth, in the November 8th issue edition of the Final Call, the Messenger's article on the national election was printed. And for the listening audience, that's always on page 19 in the Final Call newspaper. So if you have not gotten a copy of that great newspaper, the number one minister in the Nation of Islam, other than our beloved minister, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, is the Final Call newspaper. So if you haven't gotten your this week's copy of the Final Call newspaper, please do so. Thank you again so much, Brother Dimitrik, for taking time out of your busy schedule.
And thank you, Sister Ada, and certainly you're right. If we're not reading the Final Call newspaper, we're not reading. So all
That's
praise
right.
is due to Allah. Now,
yes.
My dear Brother Dimitrik, talk to us about the paradox of no-show. Of course, we know that word paradox is defined as follows: a statement or proposition that seems self-contradictory or absurd, but in reality expresses a possible truth, a self-contradictory or false proposition. Any person, thing, or situation exhibiting an apparently contradictory nature. Finally, an opinion or statement contrary to commonly accepted opinion. So, what is this paradox of the no-show?
Yes, sir. The no-show paradox is actually an academic term that describes a particular form of abstention from the electoral process. Take the listeners back a few weeks ago to the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan's magnificent message at Reverend Willie Wilson's church in Washington, D.C. And it was there, in what was really a seminal moment for the minister, he introduced to the black community a third option. We have always been aware of two options. You either vote or you don't vote. You either participate or you don't participate in politics. And so the minister said that there is this idea of an abstention where you can, for specific reasons, choose to abstain from a vote. And there are reasons that are common reasons for abstentions by individuals or persons. Sometimes a person may find himself in a conflict of interest. They may be voting on something that they may have or may receive a personal gain from, so they may choose to abstain, or they may be totally unwilling to waste their vote on either choice if those choices offer a lose-lose proposition.
Yeah.
So there are various reasons, common reasons, why a person, an individual, may choose to abstain. So when we begin to look at the scholarly literature, available literature, on the subject of abstention, so that we might support the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan's message to the black community that we should de-emphasize participation in electoral politics and reemphasize or stress the need for us to build our own communities, develop an economic foundation of strength, and proliferate a righteous culture in the hood. When we began to seek to support the minister's message in this regard, we discovered what scholars refer to as the no-show paradox, which describes a situation where the best way for the electorate to get what they want is to literally abstain from voting. And there's a lot of different scenarios and situations that the scholars describe where the no-show paradox comes into play and where it is advantageous for a person or a group of people to abstain from the vote. And so we thought that in the general sense, that was a great way to frame what the minister essentially teaching the black community to do, especially when you consider and put under a microscope the many different immigrant communities known as ethnic enclaves, your Koreatowns, your Chinatowns, your Jewtowns, your Little Africas, your Little Haitis, your Greek towns. Many of these are thriving communities of foreign-born nationals who, when you look at them again under a microscope, you see that the social ills that we suffer from in the black community, they are not suffering from those social ills, at least to the degree that we are suffering from those social ills. And one other thing that you see in the article and we discuss is that these are communities that are not too heavily involved in the political process.
Yeah.
And yet they don't have problems of police brutality. They don't have high crime situations. Most studies show that their children perform better against American-born children in schools, and they are normally wealthier. I remember in the immediate aftermath of the 2008 financial crisis, many writers were commenting about how the Asian ethnic enclaves were immune to the economic crisis that the rest of America was suffering from. And it was because they did their business among one another, and they kept their dollar circulating among their own businesses and within their own community. So when the rest of the country came down with an economic flu, in the Asian ethnic enclaves, they didn't even have a sniffle because they had learned group economics. They had learned how to live, work, and worship with one another, and they had learned how to really do and model what the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and Minister Farrakhan have encouraged the black community to do for years, but that we have struggled to do it because we have been victimized by many white-led black groups who have promoted what Dr. Harold Cruz called in his book, The Crisis of the Negro Intellectual, non-economic liberalism,
yes,
which is a duplicitous and evil scheme that was put upon leading blacks by the whites who were their advisors. And this philosophy of non-economic liberalism stresses participation in the political process with a de-emphasis on what really makes the political process worthwhile. If you're going to get anything out of the political process, you have to have money to do it. And so black groups like the NAACP and others promoted voting and the right to vote. They promoted getting a civil rights bill. They promoted other types of legislation, all different types of political rooted remedies. Yet the building of the black community's economic strength and power to hold political candidates and officers accountable for receiving our vote was non-existent. And so you have what you have today after 40 or 50 years. You have politicians who receive the black community's vote without feeling any need to deliver any promises or any commitments to the black community, and our communities remain in poverty, crime-infested, drug-infested, and as the scriptures say, a prey in the hand of the mighty.
Yeah.
So we felt very strongly about what the minister was saying, and we always take the posture that as Allah gives to his minister, who functions as his messenger and his voice among the people, a revealed message, we see it as our posture to support that revealed message with what would help make it more palatable and digestible among the various types of minds that are among the people. And so buttressing and supporting revelation with research is our posture and is our assignment. And so we have so far been pleased with the reaction to the article, and we hope that it can be a source document that can be referred to as the black community seeks to chart a way forward in the aftermath of Tuesday night's election results.
Thank you, dear brother. And before we go any further, would you please let us know how we could access this article?
Of course. It is the latest posting on our website at www.researchminister.com, where you can find a host of articles and writings devoted to research into the history of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, as well as our latest books and DVDs are available for order on that website.
Excellent. Thank you, dear brother. Now, back to the article. Statistically, reality backs you up in the position that you've just expressed, and, of course, the position of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad and the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan and those of us who are members of the Nation of Islam. Do for sell. Historically, you know, and I'm sure many who are listening know, that historically we did not get involved in the political process, specifically, again, the voting process. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad taught us that we should not invest our hopes in a morally bankrupt choice of either, as he coined it and the minister coined it the same, voting for the lesser of two evils or voting for Satan or Lucifer. Either one will get you hell. But statistically, what you're saying, dear brother, is backed up as you present a graph in your writing. It's the demographics of state legislators as of January 2015. And in this graph, you highlight that African Americans or black people are 9% of legislators, while Asian Americans are 2%, and Latino Americans are 4%. But when you contrast and compare the condition of the communities of said, you will find, inarguably, that all over the country, the so-called African-American or black community is in the worst stead. This begs the question, Brother Demetric, if this is true, and it certainly is, why then are leaders exhorting us so enthusiastically and so consistently and so emphatically exhorting the black community to participate in the vote when statistically and analytically it manifests that whatever we vote and whoever we vote for, it has little impact, if any at all, in improving the condition of our community? Certainly, they have to be aware of these statistical realities. What are your thoughts on that, dear brother?
Well, Brother James, the first thing I would say to that is this. Over time, leading blacks who have become involved in the electoral political process or realm have been able to extract from their involvement personal benefit and gain. Mm. And so because of their personal benefit and gain, they will in exchange steer those among their own people that they have influence over to overemphasize the need to participate in the political process through voting. The second reason why they promote this is because it's really the only thing that they know to do.
Sounds like a case of the blind leading the blind. All of us are falling in the ditch as a result of it. Let's explore more in the article, and certainly we'd like to get everyone involved who may be listening. Sister Ada, could you let the people know what they have to do to get involved? They're online, what they have to do to get into the queue to participate in this discussion.
Yes, sir. If you wouldn't mind, please press 1 on your phone keypads if you have a question or a comment for our guest or our host, Brother Student Minister Demetric Muhammad. I wanted to jump in myself and just read something from page 2 of the article. As I was saying, as I went through the article, it was just, you know, fascinating. And when the minister mentioned Brother Gaddafi, and he talked about how when he got the money that Brother Gaddafi was going to give to him before his demise, obviously, he was going to bail out the NAACP and the Urban League.
Yeah.
I had never heard that before, because he wanted to set them free so that they can work on behalf of black people instead of behalf of those that keep those organizations hostage to promote their causes and to keep the black man and woman crippled. So on page 2 of your article, Brother Demetric, I was reading towards the end of the page 2, it says, again, consider that we have voted for judges, mayors, governors, and even now for a black president twice, yet we're still a community in need. Poverty is high amongst us. Disease is prevalent amongst us. Blight and crime are problems for us, and we still have pitiful educational system that we depend on to educate our children. It is painfully clear and rather obvious at this point that politics is not the answer.
Thank you, Sister Ada. Any
yes.
response, Brother Demetri? Hope we didn't lose our brother. Brother Demetri?
Oh, perhaps we did lose.
Let me see if I could get him again.
Yes, sir. In the meantime, while we wait on them to get back on the call, I was going to read a little bit more of the article, and this is from page 2 of Brother Demetric's latest article. He says, if electoral politics isn't the answer, then how do we black people get what we want? And the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad answers that question under the title Ethnic Enclaves. The Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad was always telling his beloved black people in America to hurry and unite onto our own kind. He taught us that our own kind included all non-white peoples of the earth. Nowadays, America has received so many of our own kind as immigrants from their home countries, and they have formed their own communities that exist within many major cities as carved out territories and neighborhoods. The social conditions within immigrant communities in America are in stark contrast to those within the black community. Scholars like to refer to the immigrant communities as ethnic enclaves. An ethnic enclave is defined as usually urban areas within which culturally distinct minority communities maintain ways of life largely separate from those of the generally larger communities that surround them. The Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad encouraged his beloved black people that we should have knowledge of self and kind. The practical application of acquiring such knowledge in today's world involves an examination and a study of these ethnic enclaves that in many areas are made up of our black, brown, red, yellow brothers and sisters of the global black diaspora. As Minister Farrakhan has pointed out, most recently in his profound analysis of the national presidential election, the major cities of America and their ethnic enclaves must become the new model for the desperate and disunified black community effectively and dubbed the hood. Chinatown, Koreatown, Little Haiti, Little Africa, Greektown, and the more than 850 ethnic enclaves in America are examples of something that academics refer to as no-show paradox, which is what Brother Dimitri was talking about before we lost him on the line. For those of you that are just joining us, you're on the show Put on the New Man, featuring our brother, Brother Dimitri Muhammad. And I see we have our brother back on the line with us. Brother Dimitri, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Wonderful.
Yes, sir. I was
just
reading your article until we got you back.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. Yes, yes. I don't know where we left off, but I wanted to just to say in response to Brother James's question regarding why do black leaders overemphasize participation in the electoral process, and the first reason was that they derive personal benefit and gain from participation in politics. The second reason is that most of them are bereft and void of constructive solutions to the problems of their people. And this is compounded by the fact that for a long time, mainstream black groups and organizations have sworn off any kind of serious consideration and appreciation for what the nationalist side of the equation has represented, specifically in their ignoring and refusing to accept the body of work and knowledge called the teachings of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad. So when you bring all of those factors together, the only thing that they can do in response to police murder of black boys and girls is to vote. The only thing that they can say as a response to rising levels of black poverty is to vote. The only thing they can say to the problem of domestic violence and the falling apart of our families and a woeful education of our children is to vote. And the one of the main points that we really want to make in this article is that if we as a people stop and pause and reflect on the quality of life that we desire for us and our children, the kind of communities that we want to live in, and the things we want to see take place and established in our neighborhoods, almost all of it has nothing to do with voting at all. Almost all of it can be achieved without voting at all. And as we again point to the thriving immigrant communities around this country, that, as we point out in the piece, the immigrants participate so little in electoral politics in America that there are actually now groups who are recruiting them to get involved. But you can imagine the position that they're in. The question arises, why should we get involved in politics when we already have what we need? And many politicians literally court the vote among immigrant groups because they understand that when immigrants do participate in the voting process, they vote in blocks. And as a result, if they are able to agree on advancing specifics of an agenda that the immigrant groups have identified as what their community needs, what their people want, then even our own politicians will treat them better than they treat us because they understand they're going to vote in a block and they understand that if they get their vote, that they will have to do something for them. So, again, I think that these are all important factors to help us see more clearly the direction that the minister is asking us to go in and why it's most beneficial for us getting what we want and need as a people.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. As a matter of fact, dear brother, in your article, you write on the subject of economics. According to a CNN money report prepared by Jose Paglieri entitled On the Rise, Immigrant Entrepreneurs, there is a strong do-for-self zeitgeist, if you will, that is to say, a spirit of seizing the time or opportunity among foreign-born workers and citizens. Paglieri writes, immigrants created 28% of all new firms last year. They were also twice as likely to start a new business when compared to those born in the United States. It's a notable shift, he continues. Nearly all new firms are small. Many are hiring new workers seeking small business loans and shaking up established industries. Paglieri continues by sharing words from Rob Fairley, who authored the Kauffman Foundation report entitled Immigrant Entrepreneurs and Small Business Owners and Their Access to Financial Capital. The recession drove low-skilled workers into figuring out what to do. The same applies to Hispanics, who are creating new businesses at a faster clip than any other ethnic group. Hispanics make up more than half of the nation's 40 million foreign-born, and they are starting businesses at a rate that exceeds even their population growth. Now, that's something to consider. They certainly have not been swayed by this so-called need to vote. They understand coming together and maximizing their cultural and ethnic sameness to the end of becoming a free, productive, and independent community. We certainly need to do the same. Now, this may, there's a lot of background noise. I don't know where it's coming from. But, yeah, it seems to have subsided. Wow, there it is again. But at any rate, I mean, some may think that we are belaboring the obvious or dealing with a subject matter that's been dealt with to death, as they say in the language. But the fact of the matter is, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan today are still trumpeting this same clear principle. Without economics is symbol without substance. Other ethnicities, such as the Hispanic ethnicity or Hispanic community, Latino community, if you will, the Asian American community, the Haitian American community. All of these communities seem to understand that, except the American so-called Negro community. I listen, Brother Demetric, Sister Ada, to the responses of some of the radio show hosts, television hosts, black now. And you can hear the disillusionment in their voice, the disappointment in their voice, how downtrodden their thoughts now and even their hopes now seem to be as a result of Trump's victory of being elected to the White House. How far wrong could they possibly be? It matters not who's in the White House where we are concerned. This is an historical, irrefutable, and arguable truth that no matter who occupies the White House, until and unless black people understand that those who occupy the White House and control its governmental agencies are either unwilling and or unable to take black people, to get black people, to help black people out of a condition of sorrowful dependency on others. We're the only people like that. Brother Demetric, can you weigh in on this, dear brother, please?
Yes, I think that we have a real opportunity in the election of Mr. Trump, because our hopes have been rightfully dashed. Now, that might sound like a harsh saying, but if we overlay our analysis of the present situation in America with the scriptures of the Jews, the Christians, and the Muslims, we understand that God was always involved, it seems, in the choosing of rulers and leaders. Some scenarios and parables within the scriptures, they are righteous rulers, but all too often we see scenarios where there were wicked kings and wicked rulers. And during the time of Moses and the children of Israel and Aaron and Pharaoh and the Egyptians, God wanted to affect separation of the children of Israel who had been slaves, but they were God's people. They had suffered. God wanted to give, to do justice by them. What justice meant was that they would have their own land, because they had been in a foreign land serving a foreign people. So God was going to elevate them, give them a land of their own, separate them to themselves. He would separate them and sanctify them. He was not only going to give them wealth, but he was going to purify them by giving them a law to live by that would over time exorcise them of the sins of their oppressors that they had adopted. So when we look at that as a scriptural overlay, we see that Mr. Trump is viewed widely as harsh to the poor, as harsh to black people, as harsh to Muslims, as harsh to Mexicans. And so our hopes that a friendly Pharaoh would be occupying the White House are dashed. Well, the reason why I say it's a good thing is because when we give up hope and dependency that a benevolent member of the oppressor class of people is going to do right by us, then we begin to turn to one another and turn to our God and realize that if we're going to have a better life, if we're going to survive, if we're going to thrive, it will be based upon how we depend on God and ourselves. So I know many of our brothers and sisters who had hitched their wagon to Hillary's plow are sad and upset, but it's really a good thing, because who could be a nicer Pharaoh than our own black brother, who was President Barack Obama? He was kind. Sir. He was friendly. He was thought. He gave us wonderful photo opportunities to behold, with he and his beautiful wife and children occupying the seat of power in America. But for 8 years, societal conditions for black people in this country worsened under his watch. So again, you come right back to the fact that our hope can't be in politics. In the final draft of the article, Brother James, we noted that the Nation of Islam started in America in 1930, but the Honorable Elijah Muhammad did not bring the Muslim anywhere near the political process until 33 years later, when in the Muhammad Speaks newspaper, he made it known that the Nation of Islam would back black politicians whose agendas we could agree with.
Yes.
And so he waited 33 years to establish an economic base. He waited 33 years to establish a culture of independence. He waited 33 years to begin our foray to the degree that we are in it in the political process. So that is a great lesson for us to examine, because that is the same thing that immigrant groups do in this country. It's a long time before they get involved in politics. But by the time they get involved in politics, they have a strong economic base wherein they can actually help candidates that they like by funding their campaign, which also means that they can hurt candidates that don't deliver on their promises by withholding their vote and withholding their financial support. So, again, we see that our beloved messenger and his guidance to us guided us toward what the best in civilized society have adopted as the means to achievement in this country.
You know, Brother Demetric, I'm really hoping that those that are listening, and I know there are some, would elect to join this conversation. It's a relatively quiet night, and I'm hoping that's not owing to, again, the dashed hopes of our people who have invested their hope in the outcome of this recent election. Now, I don't think we know the history and the working of Hillary Clinton, as I cannot see someone who is responsible for an unjustified murder of a world leader and the deceit that she is obviously responsible for, how we can invest our hopes in someone like that. This lesser of the two evils, our brother and the student national assistant to the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, Brother Minister Ismail Muhammad, posed the question rather rhetorically. If you vote for the lesser of two evils, are you in fact ultimately voting for evil? And if we are voting for evil, how then can we profit from electing someone evil to rule over us? We would think by this time that would dawn on us, dear brother. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad was absolutely, absolutely correct when he said that we are slaves of mental death and power, easily led in the wrong direction, oh so hard to be led in the right direction. Well, that is our work, dear brother. And at this point, I want to thank you so much for the work that you are doing. Wow, I don't know what's going on in the background there. We have some serious background noise. I hope I'm being heard clearly, and we are being heard clearly.
I can hear you, brother.
Oh, praise be to Allah. Very good. Very good. I want to thank you, dear brother, for the great work that you've done, are doing, and will continue to do as a student in the ministry of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. The work that you do on the research team, I know I am a beneficiary of it. I greatly appreciate you sending me your first draft. With the exception of those that you want the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan to see first, but those that you do send me, I feel privileged and honored. And I want to encourage you to continue to write, continue to research, continue to provide us with the ammunition, the academic ammunition, but the spiritual and divine ammunition that you provide us with. This war against the mind of Satan. As the scripture says, we war not against flesh and blood, but we war against spiritual wickedness in high places, the rulers of the darkness of this world. So I want to encourage you. I want to thank you, dear brother. Please stay with us as long as you can. I know when we first extended this invitation tonight, you said that you'd be available for the first hour, and we're approaching the end of that hour. But, dear brother, whatever you can share with us in the remaining moments and for however long you can stay on, please share with us your thoughts.
I thank you, Brother James, and always appreciate your feedback and critique of those first drafts. Helps us to make our arguments stronger and more airtight against opposing views. But I will have to depart shortly, but I will be on as long as I can. We have a speaking engagement this evening with a group of brothers in a correctional facility. And so we are traveling en route to be with them tonight. But again, I'm appreciative that you would take the article and help to piece it apart and to discuss it tonight, because I really feel very strongly about what's in that article, especially now after Mr. Trump has become the president-elect. He has really proven the power of white supremacy in this country. He's proven the power of white supremacy as the chief moral goal in this country.
Yeah.
Specifically, I referenced the fact that this was a man who was recorded bragging and boasting about indiscriminately grabbing the genitals of women.
That's right.
Specifically white women. And yet, in a campaign against a white female voters in the electorate overwhelmingly chose this man over their own white female sister in Hillary Clinton. And this was very, very significant. Significant for one reason, because nobody can say that the black community did not show up and support Mrs. Clinton as we traditionally support the Democratic nominee.
That's right.
She got, I believe, 88% of the black vote, And that's in comparison to 92 to 93% that President Obama received.
Yes.
Well, of course, our own brother is expected to get more from us than a white female. But if he got 92 and she got 88, I say that black people, you know, did as we were expected to do in giving her our vote. What was very shocking to me, again, is the fact that she lost her own gender within her own race to a man who basically admitted to sexual assault. The second reason why this is significant is because hopefully it will show our own black sisters who may have a feminist mindset wherein the philosophy advanced by Gloria Steinem and others in the feminist movement was to say to all women, you're a woman first, and then you're your race and ethnicity second.
Mm-hmm.
White women proved in this election that they are white first,
yes,
and women second, because they did not care anything about the immoral carping of Mr. Trump. They saw him as a strong white male who would curtail the growth of Islam, who would minimize the spread of Mexican immigrants, and who would keep his thumb on black progress. And so for her to lose her own gender and her own race is very telling. And I think that going forward, we will see this as a blessing for black independence, as a blessing for black unity, as a blessing for us in recognizing the need that we now must do for ourselves, as other groups are doing for themselves, and because with nothing of value should we expect to come out of the Oval Office.
You know, that's an excellent point there, brother. And as a matter of fact, as I listened to the newscaster express their astonishment over the results of the election, repeatedly, on every channel, on every network, and then in general conversation, you hear these so-called politicals or intellectuals discuss and express their astonishment over the results of the election. But none of them are dealing with the obvious reality. What resonated with his voting constituents? What resonated? What did he say that resonated with them over and above the offenses that he was so obviously responsible for across the board? What resonated with them? And when we look at what resonated, what he said, and then compare that to what resonated with them, obviously, it is white supremacy. It is a white backlash. It is an expression of their intolerance of 8 years of a black family occupying the White House. It's white supremacy. So again, as you stated, this opportunity now to correct what they see in their eyes as a gross, gross error, an anomaly, if you will. They chose Trump because he's a breathing, white, bigoted, sexist, racist white man. That was enough, obviously, for them. So, dear brother, are you with us?
Yes, I'm with you. I don't know if I'll drop out here. If I drop out, I'll call back. I'm driving through a bad area. Can you hear me?
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, I can hear you now. There's so much background noise. I guess that's coming from
It may be through travel.
Yeah. Yeah, probably.
Yeah, maybe just the noise of the road. But I would say you're absolutely right. What resonated with Trump supporters was his slogan, "Make America Great Again." You know, there's such thing as euphemism or coded language. Everybody remembers when the Godfather said in the movie, "Make him an offer he can't refuse," right? You know, we know that does not mean offer the man some of his favorite milk and cookies. You know,
that is a coded phrase
that means to give him an ultimatum. He either does what we want or we kill him and his family. That's what that means. So when Donald Trump said, "Make America Great Again," it was a euphemism that invoked the image in the minds of his white audiences of a period of time when they all considered America great. And that period of time was a period of time where black people were kept in their place, where there were fewer Mexicans and immigrants from other countries, where they were superior in every field of endeavor and held a position of power. So he invoked images of bygone eras, but in those bygone eras, those were the eras of lynching, of slavery, of suffering, of death, of overt racism, as opposed to the liberal preferred covert racism. Because make no mistake about it, and this is another, I think, nuanced aspect of this whole thing, Brother James, that I kind of crystallized in my mind today. Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, the Democrats and the Republicans, are two sides of the same coin.
Same coin.
That's not a revelation. We know that. But I think that the riots and the revolts and the uprisings that are taking place now as a reaction to Mr. Trump's being elected, I think that they will pale in comparison to that which is forthcoming when the millions of whites who voted for Mr. Trump, believing that he could actually fulfill the grandiose promises that he made to them on the campaign trail, when they realize that he can't deliver on those promises, and when they realize that he is more like Hillary Clinton than they ever thought him to be, they are going to rise up and revolt. The Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, we have to remember, he delivered a lecture series called "The Time and What Must Be Done." Near the close of that series, the minister devoted several episodes to the subject of the shadow government. And therein, he went into the facts of how those who sit in the seat of the U.S. presidency are sitting in a seat that is controlled by forces that are unseen. So Mr. Trump has made grandiose promises to his suffering white electoral base. And yet, once he sits in that seat, he doesn't have his own agenda based upon his campaign promises that he'll work from. He will, under the threat of death of him and his family, work the agenda of those that control that seat. And so the building of a wall in Mexico, let's face it, those who are in the so-called elite class of whites in this country love the fact that illegal immigration proliferates because they utilize immigrant labor in their businesses, in their factories, and at their homes. So they're going to allow Mr. Trump, who may have had to say whatever he had to say to get elected,
Brother Dimitri?
Yes.
Sister Ada? No? I think it's over there, brother.
Wow, what happened?
I have no idea. I mean, we could speculate. It was a hot topic.
So this is not Gidget's format anymore?
It is, sir. I don't think she had anything. She's in Montreal, so she had nothing to do with what just occurred.
Does she have to pay for this?
Yeah. There is a payment,
really?
From what I understand, but all of that has been taken care of. So this is not the norm. Something else has occurred.
Wow.
So we'll find out. I hope our listening audience, because I'm on the line, if they can hear me, if you all who were tuned in are still tuned in and can hear me, we apologize. But we cannot explain what the interference and the short cutoff is or was the reason for it. So tune in next week, same time, same station, and we'll by then hopefully have an explanation as to why our show was cut in half.
What's brother Dimitri?
Hold on.
Excuse me. Hello.
Yes.
Greetings to you. You have reached 813-481-3921. Unfortunately, I cannot receive your call at this time. Please leave your name, number, and a brief message, and I'll get back to you very soon. Have a blessed day.
At the tone, please record your voice message. When you are finished recording, you may hang up or press pound for more options.
I'm going to hang up and call you back.
862-48-262.
Well, wait a minute. Do you hear that, Brother Dimitri? Hello? Hey. Is someone on the line?
Yes,
who is this? This is Brother James. Muhammad.
Oh, my name
who is...
My name is Jasmine. I was listening to the program.
I see. And we were cut off abruptly. I'm Brother James Muhammad. I'm the host of the show.
Yeah.
And I appreciate your tuning in, Sister Jasmine, but we were cut off abruptly. We don't have any explanation as to why.
Well, sometimes on the different shows, they say on the show, Muslim shows, if they're listening in and they don't like certain things you say, that happens. It's not just to you. It happens to a lot of people when they're saying stuff and they don't like what you're saying, you know.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree with that, dear sister. But I want to thank you for tuning in, and I want to ask you to tune in next week. We'll work these bugs out, all right?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, dear sister. And next time, join the discussion.
Okay.
All right. May Allah continue to bless you, Sister Jasmine. Thank you again. Assalamu alaikum.
You have reached the maximum time permitted to record. To send your message, press 1 at any time. To listen to your message, press 2. To re-record, press 3. For more options, press 4. To cancel, press star. To send your message, press 1 at any time. To listen to your message, press 2. To re-record, press 3. For more options, press 4. To cancel, press star. To send your message, press 1 at any time. To listen to your message, press 2. To re-record, press 3. For more options, press 4. To cancel, press star. Sorry, please try again later. Thank you for calling. Goodbye.